Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This week, we bring you another episode of the Delaware Humanities podcast, A More Just Delaware. The podcast examines pivotal moments in legislation related to hate, prejudice, and the fight for equal rights in Delaware. In this sixth and final episode, we focus on the 2016 legislation that formally recognized the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware. And Principal Chief of the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware, Dennis Coker, joins us on this episode to discuss the process of getting that legislation passed, why state recognition was necessary, and its impact. So I do want to start, Chief, with some historical context. You know, the treatment of indigenous populations like the Lenape is a dark and complex one and probably worth a whole separate conversation involving government policies of displacement and assimilation. Can you give us a brief explanation of what those policies and that history did to the Lenape Indian tribe?
Well, certainly, Tom. You know, the Lenape tribe was a vast group of people. Their traditional homeland was southeastern New York, the whole state of New Jersey, eastern Pennsylvania, over to about the Susquehanna, and then down the Delaware River drainage, including the state of Delaware. So they had a large area. So they had a somewhat large population. Most people figure that 25,000 may have been the pre-contact number for the people in that area. Of course, no one really knows specifically because there was so much early death attributed to a disease such as smallpox and measles and things like that. But the, you know, by 1750, most of the Lenape were already west of the Susquehanna. And so, you know, they had, because of environmental degradation, they were cutting down all the trees, they were killing off all the animals, their relatives, which we call, which the non-native would call resources, were dwindling, so they were finding it difficult to even live. You know, they were building dams on the Brandywine, which shut off the shad migrations in the early spring and things like that, you know. So it was really devastating to the Lenape peoples.
How difficult was it to maintain the Lenape identity after that time of devastation and demoralization?
Yeah. Well, it was very difficult. For those of us that stayed behind, you know, it's my position that the only reason we were able to stay behind was because we Christianized very early. You know, by 1750, 1760, you know, my people that were living in the Cheswold community were Christian Indians. And as you read in the record, you'll hear reference to Christian Indians. And they say that a praying Indian is a safe Indian, you know, if he's saying Christian prayers. So in order to be Christian, we had to denounce all of our savage heathen ways, as we were described. So it really meant, you know, disavowing your culture. So it wasn't, you know, very popular thing to try to practice, and in many cases it was illegal to even practice your native culture, you know, and it was illegal all the way up until, I believe, 1978 with the passage of the Religious Freedom Act, which allowed us to begin to do ceremony once again. So, you know, much of that cultural stuff was kind of underground. But it stayed live and well in many cases.
But certainly there was that prejudice and that danger of expressing your identity in any way that was even remotely public.
Well, you know, they were still fighting the Sioux on the Plains, the Great Plains, in 1880. You know, we were reading the newspapers, you know, we saw what was going on out there, and you know, so it was very popular to deny being native, just for that reason. You know, we feared being put on a train and being shipped to Oklahoma, or worse yet, having to walk, you know, as the Trail of Tears, right, evidenced in the 1830s with the Jacksonian removals. So, you know, it was, you know, it was not a very popular thing to do.
Before we start getting to the question of state recognition, were there some stepping stones toward beginning to express that identity and once again maybe mitigate some of those fears and such that you were talking about? That were those stepping stones toward moving toward state recognition?
Yeah, there were, you know, the early 1980s, the late 70s, the advent of the American Indian Movement, the AIM, as it's referred to. We began in 1991 with a 501c3, you know, called it the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware. 1993, we had our first legislation debated on at Legislative Hall, a Senate resolution number 9, I think it was. And we were opposed by the Nanticokes. We were opposed by SHPO, Historic, you know, Cultural Affairs. We were opposed by the Anthropology Department at the University of Delaware. And, you know, so that really set the tone for our struggle here in Delaware. And then in 2000, we became aware of a program with the U.S. Census Bureau that was called a State Designated Tribal Area Program. Mm-hmm. So you actually had to be nominated by HCA, and then that recommendation went to the Secretary of State, which HCA operates under, and then the Secretary of State would nominate you to the governor, who would nominate you to the Census Bureau. Well, they told us that we didn't have enough history in the state of Delaware to facilitate that nomination, so we were ignored in 2000. And then, you know, which really left us, you know, in idle mode for another decade because...
And I was going to say, before we start moving forward, I do want to go back a little bit to what you just said and start with those initial efforts in the 1990s. And you mentioned there was a fair amount of opposition.
Yes.
What was that opposition based on? Why were so many people kind of arrayed against that initial effort for state recognition?
Well, I think there was a couple of different reasons. At that time, you know, the state was hanging its hat on the Nanticoke community being the only surviving Native community in the state. You know, of course, from the Native perspective, I'm sure they didn't want us to try to get our fingers in their pie. The University of Delaware, they had aligned themselves pretty much with the Nanticokes. You know, the Nanticokes were politically connected. They had a judge as a tribal citizen, you know, so, you know, it was just something it seemed like they didn't want it for some reason or another. One tribe in the state was enough for them. And so, you know, they rallied their troops around they called us a tri-racial group, which really couldn't be, you know, further from the truth for most of the people in my community. You know, even for people like myself, you know, every ancestor that I have on both sides of my family, my mother and my father, were born in the Cheswold community as far back as I can go in the historical record, which is like 1765, you know. So, you know, that was the gist of their opposition.
And I imagine that had to be frustrating because you would like to think that you would be making common cause with the Nanticoke. And instead, it's they're as much of a barrier as anybody else, which seems that had to be terribly frustrating.
Well, Indians through the course of history have not been good friends to each other. You know, the divide and conquer mentality of the colonizing governments, pitting one group against the other for trade goods and things like that. You know, I just look at it as a result of colonization. And, you know, that's why it's so important for us today to decolonize.
So you mentioned that you first sought that census tribal statistical area status for the 2000 census. It did not work out then, but it did for 2010 in Cheswold. Explain to us exactly why this was such kind of a watershed moment, getting this census status, and what came of that status once it was given to the tribe in 2010.
Yeah. Well, it was very important for us to capitalize on that 2010 census opportunity. So we took the, you know, the bull by the horns, and working with Dr. Kara Bloom, who was an anthropologist, I believe, with State Parks. She had been with us for quite a few years ever since our days with Ned Height, an archaeologist here in Delaware that was doing a lot of work with the Department of Transportation. So we developed our own evidentiary packet. We identified all of the references to the Cheswold community that existed by, you know, several anthropologists that had really come to Delaware to really talk with the Nanticokes. But when they were riding that train from Philadelphia to Millsboro, they passed through Cheswold, and they recognized those people looked a lot like the ones we're interviewing down in Sussex County. So, you know, which really ended up with C.S. Westlager coming to Cheswold and really doing a somewhat of a deep dive in the 40s. So we put all that together in a packet and sent it to Governor Minner, in anticipation of this 2010 census. So when Governor Minner left office, I think it was in 2008, Jack Markell came into service as our governor. And one of his early actions was to take his department heads and say, is there anything left on your desk that we need to take care of from the past administration? Well, on the HCA desk, which had been that leadership there had been taken over by Tim Slavin, he read that evidentiary packet and his comment to me was, this is overwhelmingly convincing, so he felt comfortable enough to make the recommendation to the Secretary of State, who was convinced that, it was the right thing to do since we had been so sorely treated in 2000, to make the recommendation to the Census Bureau, and that happened. And we did receive the census designation for 2010. Along with that, which is kind of where the story gets a little murky, I received a letter from the Secretary of State in the summer of 2009 that actually said that the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware is a state-recognized tribe, okay? So everything was fine and dandy. We were satisfied. We finally got our state recognition. A couple of years went by, and we had in 2007, we had actually developed a confederation. It was called the Confederation of Lenape Nanticoke Tribes of the Delaware Bay, with the expectation that the three communities that exist in the Delaware Bay area, the Nanticoke, Lenape from New Jersey, the Lenape from Cheswold, the Nanticoke from Millsboro, would join in this confederation, and we would work on issues that were common to all three tribes. So we had that confederation put together, and in that confederation document, we had reciprocity clauses, you honor my citizens and I'll honor your citizens, things like that. Well, around 2012, the state of New Jersey decided to not recognize their state-recognized tribes. So the Nanticoke Lenni Lenape chief at the time, Chief Mark Gould, contacted me and asked me if I would go to bat for his artisans that were being harassed by the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, because to receive the benefits of the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, you have to be either a federally recognized tribal citizen or a state recognized tribal citizen. And now New Jersey was saying we don't have any state recognized tribes. So, you know, so I took the opportunity. I wanted to test the waters to see what our recognition meant. So I said, sure, I'll do that, you know. And so I wrote a letter to the Indian Arts and Crafts board and advocating for these artisans that were being harassed in New Jersey. So the Indian Arts and Crafts Board, in response to my letter, wrote a letter to the Delaware Attorney General saying, who are these Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware people? So it turns out that back in 2009, when we received our letter from the Secretary of State, in the spring of 2010, the Indian Arts and Crafts Board, who periodically will poll the states and to see if they have any additional communities added or are there any that need to be taken off. Well, in the spring of 2010, the Attorney General answered that we have only one state recognized tribe in the state of Delaware, and that's the Nanticoke. Right. So it was a classic example of the left hand of the state not knowing what the right hand's doing. So we did a deep dive into, you know, to that status. You know, the first thing I did was call SHPO and say, you know, do you consider us state recognized? And they said, we sure do, you know. And so when they looked into it, it turns out that the Indian Arts and Crafts Board only respects two different types of state recognition. One of those being recognition from a state Indian committee. So the fact that Delaware does not have an Indian commission, so it was obvious that our recognition didn't come from that avenue. So the other avenue is legislative action. So when we looked at our letter from the Secretary of State, it was not legislative action. It didn't qualify as legislative action. And even all of the references in Delaware's codes that talked about the Cheswold community, we had our own schools, mm-hmm. the Department of Education had been funding our schools. None of that stuff added up to legislative action. So, you know, after almost a year and a half of trying to navigate, you know, with SHPO and the state, they suggested that I approach one of our local politicians to see if I can get a bill drafted for state recognition. So I actually wrote four letters, two to two representatives, two to two senators, because our area is kind of split a little bit. And I received response to one. And so, you know, that representative agreed to work with us on crafting legislation. So I ended up sitting down with the aides at Legislative Hall, and we drafted an awesome piece of legislation. And one of the you know, I was asked to comment on it and edit it. So, you know, with most legislation, it begins with a resolution with a bunch of whereas clauses.
Right.
You know, and which really kind of sets the groundwork for the be it resolved clause, which is only what ends up being the law,
right.
The be it resolved. So my request was, can we take all of this information in the whereas clause and put it down in the be it resolved, you know, area of the resolution, simply to prevent it seeming like we just fell out of the sky yesterday.
And I was going to say, what were some of those things, those whereas things that you wanted in there that you felt would give the substantial foundation for it?
It talked about us having a 125-year relationship with the state of Delaware. It talked about the fact that we had you know, driver's licenses that identified us as a separate race of people. Things like that really gave us a history, and I wanted to see that down in the law.
I was going to say, ultimately, that legislation did wind up passing without opposition in both chambers. And considering what we talked about earlier and that initial opposition in the 1990s, it had to be so satisfying to come to the end of this journey and have full support for what you were trying to do.
The Senate and the House unanimously voted, passed that legislation on, July the 1st. Actually, the House was June 30th. I was sitting in there at 2:30 in the morning on July the 1st for the Senate portion of it, but both votes were unanimous. Governor Markell signed our legislation, I think, on August 4th. So we were off and officially codified as a state-recognized tribe.
So what doors did that open for the Lenape Tribe of Delaware?
Well, it's amazing because prior to that period, it seemed that we lacked credibility. But after that legislation passed, it was like the floodgates were opening up. And, people, collaborators, different academic institutions, different NGOs, environmental NGOs, it seems like everybody wanted to have an Indian standing next to them on the stage at that point. I've been pretty vocal with my whole tenure as a leadership here. And much of what I had been doing in the decade between 2000 and 2010 was to be where I was invited. I learned very early that if you're not at the table, you'll probably be on the menu. So the floodgates did open, and they're still open to a great extent.
As we discuss these issues on this podcast, we've often sought to look at the personal impact, noting that while we talk about some of these things conceptually, they also have very personal real-life impact on people in their daily lives. And I'm curious how getting state recognition affected you personally and other members of the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware.
The one disappointment that I have had over the years is that many of our community members are still reluctant to raise their hand and say, I'm Native American. We still only have about 200 enrolled citizens. So many of them have been reluctant and still are a little apprehensive. The biggest response that we really did get were from, educated tribal citizens who really understood the uniqueness of that status. We still have a lot of work to do.
So that it sounds like the one challenge is kind of getting those people who identify as Lenape to actually kind of formally be
Step up to the
Lenape.
plate.
Beyond that, what are some of the other challenges? Does the issue of federal recognition come up? Does some issues of Lenape land, particularly in the Cheswold area, come up? What are some of the things that you, as you look forward, see as the things that you'd like to delve into or challenges you'd like to overcome?
Well, it's a tumultuous period in Indian country right now. I know that every December I'm confronted with a discussion where there's a certain element of Congress is trying to defund Indian country. If it wasn't for the fact that many of the Western states have large populations of Native peoples, and those their representatives in Congress, kind of have fended it off, but there still is an effort to defund Indian country. So, the federal tribes are somewhat at war with us now. We've been gaining a lot of ground here in the East, and all of a sudden they're showing up where they never would before. I never used to see many of the federal tribes at those consultations. And then probably about 5 or 6 years ago, they started to show up. And then they would refuse to continue with the consultation if a state-recognized tribe was on the call. We have some struggles there. For me, I don't really let that bother me too much. I am not a major fan of federal recognition, simply because, the Creator granted us our sovereignty. I don't need someone else to reinforce it. We know who we are. And besides that, when, the federal government, they can grant you recognition today and take it away from you tomorrow if they feel like it. I mean, we can look at the termination period where they just terminated, many tribes in the 50s, so it's not a guarantee.
So bringing it back to Delaware, what is your level of optimism for the next generation of Lenape here in Delaware in terms of the visibility, in terms of the population? What do you see as as the future of the Lenape Indian tribe of
Yeah,
Delaware?
in a ways, it's a little bit bleak. The community I grew up in was a community that was endogamous, meaning we were marrying within. So when they closed down our schools in 1964, we started to, when Cupid, starts firing his little arrows, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. So we started to intermarry to a great degree. And that intermarrying is more prevalent nowadays than marrying within. So, with us having a 25% blood quantum requirement, it's getting more and more difficult for us to find qualified citizens. We're doing as much as we possibly can, and trying to keep our center door open.
You've been listening to the Delaware Humanities Podcast, A More Just Delaware, with Dennis Coker, Principal Chief of the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware, discussing Delaware formally recognizing the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware in 2016. The full podcast is available at DelawarePublic.org and DEHumanities.org. The podcast is brought to you by Delaware Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Delaware Humanities is a recipient of United We Stand Connecting Through Culture funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities to support A More Just Delaware and related programming. And that's a wrap on this edition of The Green. The stories, interviews, and podcasts you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter there by clicking Newsletters at the top of the page. And remember, The Green is also available via podcast at our website, as well as Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and the NPR and Delaware Public Media apps. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us your feedback and story ideas on our Facebook page or by emailing us at thegreen@delawarepublic.org. Thanks to all those who helped make this week's show possible, Delaware Humanities' Rachel Sheffield and Delaware Public Media's senior producer, Kyle McKinnon. For them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Burns saying thanks for joining us this week. And we'll see you again next week on The Green, where Delawareans get tuned into a first state of mind.